Welcome to Slaughterhouse Stories. I hope you enjoy the stories I have for you tonight. Hello to all you things that go bump in the night. Hello to all you humans as well. Welcome to the show that brings you creepypastas, short scary stories, and dark horror-themed poetry from all across the world. This is the Slaughterhouse Stories Podcast, Episode 51, A Krampus Carol. I am your host and narrator, Ghost Train, telling you to lock your doors, get under your blanket, and keep the lights on. If you'd like to come and discuss all things spooky with me, you can find the links to all my social accounts in the show notes. And if you'd like to write in and have your email read on the show, email slaughterhousestoriespodcast@gmail.com with creepypasta requests, stories you've written, or your own real-life paranormal encounters. Before we get to tonight's first story, I'd like to ask you a favor. If you're enjoying the show, please head over and leave a review through iTunes and help spread the word to your friends, family, the Christmas monsters waiting for you. Whomever, tell them, be a listener, not a victim. Now, let's get spooky. Tonight will of course be an all Christmas episode, since, you know, Christmas. And sadly I've been sick, so that's why I sound like this. But, to start us off, is a story by Jesse Darby, about a 7-year-old boy excited for Christmas Day, and the presents that will be waiting for him. He tears through the presents like normal, perfectly happy and content, until he finds one that even his parents are unsure of. What was this present? Where did it come from? Leave out the milk and cookies, relax, and enjoy Mystery Under the Tree. We all know that magical feeling when you were 6 or even 13 years old on Christmas Day. Anything is possible when you run into your living room and see that brightly lit Christmas tree with presents stacked underneath it. The colorful designs of the wrapping paper seem so alluring and make you giggle with glee. Because then, you believe that anything can be under all those layers of wrapping paper, just waiting for you to discover it. My Christmas story is this experience, like that of any other 7-year-old child. Normally, when you open a present on Christmas Day, you expect to find something happy or positive. What I found is impossible for me to explain, even today in my late 20s. I cannot begin to comprehend it. I woke up earlier than usual, about 8 a.m. I ran down the stairs in my Christmas pajamas. My mom and dad were sitting on the couch, mugs of coffee in their hands, smiling up at me. The radio was playing Jingle Bell Rock like it does every year in my small town. On the kitchen counter waiting for me was a freshly baked pan of gingerbread cookies and milk, just like the perfect Christmas I experienced every year. There was one thing, however. One thing that was different. There was a small box under the tree, roughly about the size of a box of pencils with the same appearance. This present was not wrapped in the same color wrapping paper, which made me curious. Being 7 years old, I thought it was simply a special present, different from the rest. Better. "I wonder what's in this one," I said, picking up the small box. My parents, though, didn't seem to recognize the present, almost as if they had absolutely no idea how it got underneath the tree. I rolled my eyes at them, believing that they were just pretending not to know what it was to maintain some sort of element of surprise. I took the box and peeled off the wrapping paper, but there wasn't a present in there. There was a cardboard box with my address written on it. It was a package. Now, I'm not talking about a package like you would see from Amazon or anything. It was a package sent to me from an unidentified individual. Oddly enough, there was no return address anywhere on the package, which gave no clue as to who sent it to me. There were, however, in dark red pen, the initials NP, scrolled on the front in signature format. I was genuinely confused at this point, as were my parents. I took a pair of scissors and cut through the tape that sealed the sides of the box and opened it. Inside the box was a letter, not the sort of letter that you would expect to come in the mail. There was no envelope. It was a traditional letter, with the paper folded neatly in half. A wax-stamped seal, keeping the letter closed. I broke the seal and opened the letter. It read as such. Dear Timothy Pines, I watch you when you're sleeping. I know when you're awake. Go to sleep tonight, Timmy. And please, do not wake up, for your own sake. Happy Holidays, SC. I read the letter several times, trying to grasp any sort of meaning in it, but I didn't realize something until later. I looked at the bottom of the letter, and attached to it by a small piece of tape was a small razor blade. I didn't go to sleep that night. I was hysterical. My mom and dad had to stay awake with me that night and play games with me, try to get me to calm down in any way that they possibly could. I guess perhaps we really don't know what we're opening that morning of every year. Now, as years go by, I look at Christmas in a completely different perspective. Happy Holidays, whoever may be reading this. I guess we really don't know what might be awaiting us underneath those layers of wrapping paper on Christmas morning. I wonder if jolly old St. Nick really sent that letter. I mean, if he did, either he is the threat, or he likes fucking with kids. Either way, while you're wondering if you missed any mystery present that is warning you of impending doom, let me move us to the next story of the night. This one by Cafe Legendary, about a teenager who has a hard time sleeping, and now has an even harder time sleeping, thanks to something that happened on his favorite holiday of the year while staying in a hotel with his family. What is it that ruined his holiday? Will any of them survive? Put out the carrots for the reindeer, settle back in, and enjoy Christmas. I can never sleep well in hotels. I guess that's somewhat of an understatement. I can never sleep well in general, but hotels were the worst. Just the thought that the previous occupant of this bed is a complete stranger was repulsive in my mind. But that's beside the point. What I'm getting at is how this lack of sleep in hotels changed my life. Christmas. We were spending Christmas in a shitty hotel, and not with family. Great. Don't get me wrong. It's not like I didn't enjoy the all-you-can-eat buffet of saggy hash browns and grits for Christmas Eve dinner. Of course, the first snow of the season had to cancel our flight down to Virginia. It was Christmas Eve, and I was trying to sleep in this bleach-saturated room. My mind was wandering, wondering what had happened in here to cause such an excessive amount of bleach needed. The room was nothing out of the ordinary. Two beds, one for my dad and I, and another for my sister and mom. A bathroom and a stained microwave that looked in need of a good dusting. Somehow I escaped the room and stench of bleach into a dreamless sleep. Waking up, I could tell it was early morning. My dad was next to me snoring, and he usually wakes up before 4 a.m. That's when it hit me. It's Christmas, and I was about to let this bad fortune ruin my favorite holiday. Looking across the bed at the clock to check the time is when I noticed it. The silhouette of a man, about 6'3" across the room, staring at my mom sleeping. Still half asleep and caught up in the moment, I couldn't help thinking of Santa Claus. I realized how stupid the thought was, and horror soon filled my head. I choked back a shriek. I knew I couldn't let him see me awake, so I quietly put my head back down, pretending to sleep. My mind was racing. Someone was in my room, and I couldn't do anything. I was a scrawny 16-year-old. This man looked built like an ox. I wondered if I could wake my dad up in time, but I knew that wouldn't work. He slept like a rock. A bucket of water couldn't get him up fast enough. I was practically in tears. I'd never felt so helpless. For the second time, I choked back a scream. He was standing next to me, and I could feel and hear his repulsive breath on my face. It smelled like he'd been eating rotten meat with no thought to brush his teeth. If he didn't know I was awake, surely he did now, seeing my face was contorted in fear. The breathing stopped, and I couldn't help the sigh of relief. I would have kicked myself, but there was no need. I heard the room door open and close. I launched out of bed. Nothing in the room was in disarray, and my family was still asleep. That couldn't have been a dream. I couldn't have imagined it. I couldn't have imagined it. Feeling awake as ever, a horrible idea popped into my head, and before I could push it away, I was pulling the door open. Glancing back to the door, in order to memorize the room number, I saw the giant spray-painted black X on the door. Had I seen this without a prior experience, I probably would have thought it was just some stupid kids. I knew better, but not enough to know what it was for. My heart skipped a beat. There he was, turning the corner at the end of the hall. Why am I doing this? I tailed him down to the parking lot. He was nowhere in sight. One moment, he's walking out the lobby. The next, he's gone. Realizing how cold it is outside in paper-thin pajamas, I returned to the lobby. No one was around. Strange. I could swear there's usually a night concierge. Adrenaline wearing off, I realized how stupid and rash my actions had been. He could have killed me. I cursed myself back up the stairs. I knew something was wrong when I got to my floor. The door to my room was wide open. I hadn't left it that way, right? I walked inside, and after a quick search of the room, I determined it was safe, and my family was still asleep. I locked the door and got back into bed, though I didn't sleep for the rest of the night. I listened to my dad get up, and eventually my mom followed, but I still pretended to sleep. A few hours passed, and my parents got my sister and I up. We got into the car and made our way back to the airport. Digging through my bag to grab my iPod led to the finding of something that hadn't been in there the previous day. A note that simply held the five words I still think about to this day. I knew you were awake. It's now been 2 months since the hotel experience. I'm still scared for my life, and it gets worse every day. That note I found wasn't the only one. I still receive them. Nothing like little notes to keep you humans on your toes and living in fear. Sometimes it's best just to mind your business and hope the bad man doesn't notice you. But the bad man notices human, and now the fear will never end. Merry Christmas, human. While you check your mailbox to see if you have a note of your own, let me give you this week's recommendation. For the last recommendation of the Christmas season, I'm recommending the movie Black Christmas. The one from 1974. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, a creature was stirring. In Bedford, several unsuspecting people are about to receive season's greetings of terror. Head over to wherever you get your movies from. Grab and enjoy Black Christmas. Now that I've given you this week's recommendation, let's take a trip down to open mic night at Beazle Pub. Welcome, fiends, to open mic night at Beazle Pub, where we invite you to sit right here and go into the more poetic side of fear. Poems of murder, creatures, and ghosts. All the things that scare you the most. To open things up at the pub tonight is a poem by the one and only H.P. Lovecraft, with a poem about a Yule celebration. And then to end the night at the pub, a poem about a very different kind of Santa. A Santa that wants to eat something other than milk and cookies. Enjoy the sleigh ride through the rhymes while you listen to Yule Horror and 'Twas the Fright Before Christmas. There is snow on the ground, and the valleys are cold, and a midnight profound blackly squats over the wold. But a light on the hilltops hath seen hints of feastings unhallowed and old. There is death in the clouds, there is fear in the night, for the dead in their shrouds hail the sun's turning flight, and chant wild in the woods as they dance around a Yule altar, fungus and white. To no gale of earth's kind sways the forest of oak, with its thick boughs entwined by mad mistletoes choke. For these powers are the powers of the dark, from the graves of the lost druid folk. And mayest thou to such deeds be an abbot and priest, singing cannibal greeds at each devil-wrought feast, and to all the incredulous world, shewing dimly the sign of the beast. 'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a louse. The traps were all set by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while nightmares of body parts danced in their heads. And Mama with her hatchet and I with my axe had just settled down for a little nightcap, when out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my chair to see what made the splatter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and ripped through the sash. The moon on the breast of the blood-stained snow gave a hideous glow to objects below, when what, to my wandering eye, should appear? The watchman was dead, with a knife in his ear. There, on the lawn, knelt a man rather thick. The blood on his coat told me he was St. Nick. More rapid than vultures, he sprang to his feet. This zombified Santa was hungry for meat. Where are the children? I want them now. Bring them down to me, you ugly fat cow. On time and impatient, I've come to your home. I hunger for brains, and I'm not alone. As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, a legion of demons flew down from the sky. And up to the housetop, this evil took roost, with red beady eyes and long pointy tooth. And then, in a heartbeat, I heard on the roof the digging and pawing of each demon hoof. As I drew in my hand and was turning around, down the chimney, St. Nicholas came with a growl. He was dressed, all the hair of the dead he had skinned, and his clothes were bloodstained from both women and men. With a bundle of cutlery hung on his back, he grabbed for a knife and began his attack. His eyes, they stared through me, his smile fucking scary. His nose was all wrinkled like an old rotten cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow. He slashed at my leg, and I fell to the floor. The stump of my limb he held tight in his teeth, and the blood seeped from it to white tile beneath. He had a cruel face and some blood in his beard. His expression was empty. For my life, I now feared. He was ugly and evil, a sick little elf, and I knew things must change for my kids and myself. With my leg now missing, my wife surely dead, I pushed from the floor and kicked Nick in the head. He spoke not a word, but fell straight on his back. All the traps sprung, just thunderous snap. Laying there writhing, right where he fell, this bastard passed right through the doorway of hell. The demons then vanished, my children were safe. I sat there crying, beginning to faint. But before I passed out, I screamed with all might. Scary Christmas to all, and to all, a good fright. Lovecraft always bringing the horror in ways others can't. And fuck, a zombie Santa. What? Even I don't want that coming down my chimney. So hopefully he just keeps climbing down everyone else's. But let's head out of the pub before something tries to bite us and get back home for the last story of the night. One last time, this is Season Screaming. For the last Christmas-themed story of the holiday season, I bring you a story of Cindy and her big sister, Maddie. Maddie isn't the best sister, and is often jealous over the attention her little sister gets. Unfortunately, her cruelty and torment to Cindy are about to catch up with her on Christmas. What is it that's coming for Maddie? You already know, the title gave it away. So relax by the fire and enjoy A Krampus Carol. If there was anyone to be found on Santa's naughty list, it was surely Cindy's older sister, Maddie. Cindy was 8, and Maddie was 3 years more, and had never said a nice thing to Cindy in her life, or so it seemed. Cindy's my favorite. Cindy's so pretty. Cindy this, Cindy that. These were the words from Maddie's mother that rang in Maddie's head through every day of the year, but especially around Christmas time, when Cindy was talking sweetly of gift-giving and decorating and loving her family and friends. Cindy was sweet, but it was authentic. All she really wanted was to be loved by Maddie, the way that she herself loved Maddie. Since Cindy was a baby, Maddie hadn't liked her. Some of Cindy's earliest memories revolved around the constant, sideways looks she would receive from Maddie, the passive aggression, the endless competitions for Mom's affection. Cindy was always the one to receive it, but on certain days, she would ask her mother to pay Maddie some attention. "Oh, your sister's fine," her mother would say. "Your sister gets plenty of attention." And after saying this, her mother would usually give Maddie a half-hearted pat on the head, and then go right back to giving Cindy all the affection a child would ever need. It left a hollow place in Cindy. And when she tried to give Maddie the love she so desperately needed, Maddie would shun Cindy, as if Cindy were a leper. Now this year, Maddie had been extra bitter. Perhaps it was the additional attention Cindy garnered for her performance in the school's Christmas play. Or maybe it was the way Mom constantly bragged about Cindy's acting. "She's the next Meryl Streep, I'm telling you," Cindy's mother would brag. But whatever the reason, Maddie took every single chance she saw to torment her younger sister. Cindy woke up one morning with gum in her hair. Another day, she found that her underwear was soaked in honey. Her favorite dolls would go missing. The TV in her room, which Maddie wasn't allowed to have, was constantly unplugged. Yet Cindy's desire for her sister's acceptance continued through the month of December. She continued to be kind. She persisted in giving Maddie compliments when her mother did not. The gift at the top of Maddie's Christmas list was a brand new makeup kit. Cindy made sure that she would be the one to give it to her Christmas morning. Despite all this, Cindy had felt a wear and tear from all of Maddie's torments throughout the month, and it all came to a breaking point on Christmas Eve. The family sat at the Christmas Eve dinner table and ate ham and mashed potatoes and Christmas cookies. Cindy's mother had been bragging shamelessly all night long about Cindy's acting. There was no mention of Maddie, not at any point. Maddie was stewing, and Cindy could see it. At one point, through all the bragging and praising and gloating, Maddie chimed in. "I don't think Cindy's acting is that good," she said, matter-of-factly. It was though a bomb had gone off in the room. Everyone looked at Maddie like they were unsure they'd heard correctly. It was like blasphemy. "What kind of a thing is that to say?" asked Mother. Maddie shrugged. "I don't know," said Maddie. "I just think you're exaggerating a little bit. I mean, she's decent." All of the memories of Maddie's torments began to boil and fester in Cindy's mind. And now here was Maddie, disparaging Cindy at the dinner table in front of the entire family, in front of all the aunts and uncles and cousins and friends. "At least I'm good at something," Cindy blurted. And just like that, Maddie retracted into a pit of shame. Cindy's words rang true and humiliating. Mother added fuel to the fire by shrugging at Maddie in a matter-of-fact manner. "Your sister's got a point," said Mother. Cindy felt horrible as she watched Maddie sulk and trudge off towards the bathroom like a beaten dog. Cindy hated the power she held in her hands. Everyone hunkered down in their beds and waited for Santa to leave his gifts below the tree. But Cindy had trouble sleeping. It was midnight now. Cindy rarely found herself awake at this hour, but she knew why. Cindy removed her covers and hopped out of bed and tippy-toed across her room. She was careful not to wake anyone. She opened her closet and grabbed Maddie's wrapped gift. She tiptoed down the dark hallway and dragged her fingers along the wall so as not to stumble around in the dark. "I'll give Maddie her gift and tell her I'm sorry and tell her I love her," Cindy thought to herself. "That's what I'll do, and she'll be happy and she'll forgive me. And maybe she'll even say she loves me too." When Cindy arrived outside of Maddie's door, she heard strange, shuffling noises coming from inside. Perhaps Maddie was preparing another prank for Cindy. No matter. Cindy was going to walk in and give Maddie her present and try to make amends. Cindy opened the door just a crack. She was careful not to startle Maddie. It was so dark inside the room, and she couldn't see a thing. But she could hear a great deal of shuffling inside the room. Cindy stared into the room for quite some time, patiently waiting for her eyes to adjust to the gloom. When her eyes adjusted, she saw an empty bed. She saw Maddie's wide-open window. She saw a 7-foot figure standing in the shadows. She saw the rounded cage upon its back. And she saw Maddie sitting in the cage, like a frightened bird. As Cindy's terrified eyes further adjusted to the dark, she saw the figure more clearly. It had a goat's head, with large horns on top. Its eyes were red and impish and hostile. It wore a suit much like Santa Claus, and it even had jingling sleigh bells hanging from a few ends of the garments. Cindy stood frozen with fear as the creature glanced at her and gave her a nod and wink. The creature made its way towards the window. As it did, the last Cindy saw of her sister was a look of fear and sadness and regret. and then the creature left as Cindy stood there with the present in her hands. Down the chimney, he will come with his great big grin, and you'll find that even the kiddies are very liable to sin. What will Krampus say when he finds everybody sinning? What will Krampus say when he hears them sin, sin, sinning? Poor Maddie. She just wanted to be loved as well. Wanted to be accepted and cherished as much as her sister. But instead, she's another victim for Krampus. But it goes to show that the ability of you humans to bully each other isn't always without consequence. Especially on Christmas. Feast well, Krampus. Feast well. But now, I believe it is enough scares for this week. I hope you will join me again next week for more stories that are sure to keep you afraid during the day and awake at night. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the stories that I had for you tonight. And until next time.
Stay spooky.